Good morning. My name is John Wayne. I'm a member of the Medical Care Section, and I would like to welcome you to this section. Obviously, the title deals with H1N1, and many of us know that back in February, when we were submitting abstracts to APHA, H1N1 work research was just beginning. So through the efforts of the Medical Care Section and the Health Administration Section, we were able to get what I call a late breaker session to present some of the research that has been going on this particular year for the last several months. And I would like to say at the beginning that this research wouldn't have been possible without two networks in place. One is the CDC-funded PERC Centers, and the other is the Robert Wood Johnson PBRN Practice-Based Research Networks that already had networks in place that could respond in a timely manner to questions surrounding the H1N1 outbreak. And at this time, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Tamara Clayman, who is with the Georgetown University, and she will be talking to you today about school closures in response to the H1N1.
Thank you, John, and thank you to you and to the sections that organize this session and to Glenn for organizing it as well. I actually was shocked that there were so many people here this morning. I thought there were going to be like three people in the audience. So thank you all for getting up so early to come to this session. I'm going to talk about school closures in response to H1N1. Initially, I just want to acknowledge my colleagues in doing this research, John Kramer, who's not here, and Mike Stoto, who's in the audience today, both of whom were tremendously helpful in collaborating in this. Additionally, I want to acknowledge the Harvard PERC and the Georgetown University O'Neill Institute for National and Global Health Law for their support of this work. So in spring 2009, in response to the initial outbreak of H1N1, there were school closures that started in April in New York. You probably all remember the prep school in New York City that closed because students had gone on vacation to Mexico and came back ill. Ultimately, over 700 schools closed in the United States, and over 300,000 children were affected, and countless other families, parents, businesses. So we wanted to look at this from a systems perspective, and we realized as we started to cull through a variety of media reports and ad hoc conversations that there was a lot of variability in terms of deciding when to close schools and what the triggers would be for school closures. And we realized that much like in the medical care system, when there's great variability in this type of a system, it signals a problem with public health emergency preparedness and dealing with the issues that come up. So we came up with, based on the research that we did, we came up with a number of issues that arose that we wanted to address. The first was, what are the goals of school closure? Whether to close schools, what the triggers would be, when schools should reopen, and who should make these decisions, each of which I'll talk about. So, oh dear. Some of the pictures might not come up. There seems to be a Mac to PC issue. One of the first issues is to expect uncertainty, that data on the transmissibility, the virulence, effectiveness of preventative strategies were all very unclear. Many of you may remember that every week in the newspaper, the data was changing about who was getting sick, how quickly they were getting sick, and a lot of the information was very unclear. There were frequent changes in the case definition of H1N1 and what the triggers were for closure of schools in response to those. There were changes in probable, suspected versus confirmed cases. Some schools closed because there were confirmed cases in their community or in the school. Other schools closed because there may have been a case, people were exposed and were showing symptoms. And then other schools, there were just suspected cases, kids who had flu-like symptoms, but it wasn't really clear if it was H1N1 or if it was worried well who were concerned. And there wasn't a very clear definition of when schools were going to be closed based on these definitions. Additionally, in terms of official guidance, we know that because the information was changing so rapidly, CDC had to make changes in their guidance basically almost daily. And it seemed to a lot of the public that there wasn't clear guidance to schools or to public health departments about what the response should be. And it looked like there was dissonance between local health departments, state health departments, and CDC about what the actual response should be. So part of expecting uncertainty is that officials who are deciding whether or not to close schools really have a need to show to have flexibility and to monitor the impact of actions. We saw that in response, when schools closed, a lot of students were going to malls and coffee shops and public libraries, which probably didn't impact the spread of disease very much because it didn't keep people away from each other. Additionally, families were affected. There were great economic effects, particularly among communities where people may not be able to take off work or work from home. So schools need to school officials and health officials need to have flexibility and continuously monitor the impact of the decisions that are made. Additionally, the goals have to be clarified. A lot of times goals differ. One of the initial goals of school closures, and we've seen this in previous pandemics, is to limit the spread of disease in the community. Here you can see the difference, the impact of closing, of community mitigation, potentially on pandemic outbreaks and on pandemic spread. Another goal may be protecting children from consequences of getting sick. So rather than limiting the spread to the community outside the school, you may want to protect the children who are in the schools from acquiring H1N1. Additionally, the decision to close schools may be a reaction to staff shortages or children being kept at home. So if you only have 5 children in every class, school officials may decide to close schools just because there aren't enough people there to make it worth keeping open. And not being clear about what the goal is makes it very problematic to decide when this decision is going to be made. So depending on goals, alternatives to closure may be more effective. For example, teaching students online, holding classes in alternative locations, and keeping children home who are sick rather than maybe closing the entire school. Additionally, the trigger for closure may be later. It may be that rather than closing schools when there's a suspected case, perhaps it's when there is an actual case in the school or in the community. The next issue is clearly clarifying authority and decision processes, and this was a big issue throughout the country. We know that laws and practices vary from state to state. Some states, there are a public health emergency has to be declared for the health department to make this decision. Other states, it's partnership between the health department and education department. And a lot of times, the people who are making these decisions don't really know who's actually in charge and who has the authority. Practices may also vary from community to community. There might be some school districts that make a decision one way and other school districts that make a decision another way. Additionally, whether or not an emergency has been declared may change who makes the decision in deciding whether or not to close schools. And then what type of emergency has been declared. A public health emergency may look very different than just a general emergency. So all of these things need to be clarified and processes need to be in place to address them in every community, which we saw was not the case. There was an example in Rockville, Maryland, where the health department decided to close the schools and the superintendent told the press that he was not interested, he didn't agree with that decision, nobody consulted him, and it made the response look very disorganized, and it happened across the country. Additionally, being clear about who is at the table, often there are a variety of perspectives and concerns. Should there only be health officials and education officials? Should there be transportation officials? Should there be parents, other community members, business community members at the table? A lot of times, this isn't clarified at all, and many people feel as though they've been left out or that they weren't consulted in the decision. And often, this may depend on the actual goals of closure. If the goal is to prevent community spread, then you might want larger community input, whereas if the goal is to protect children, then perhaps including parents might be more appropriate. So how the decision process is structured is key in clarifying authority and decision processes. This is from a RAND study that talks about how to use processes to make decisions, particularly in trying times. And so this is one example of a way to better structure the process in clarifying authority and decision processes in uncertain times. So in conclusion, the public health emergency preparedness system improvement will require a variety of things. Most importantly, a consideration of goals, of why interventions are being used, an expectation of uncertainty in unclear times, and clarification of authority in response to such an event. Any questions? Yeah.
Do you have any evidence at all to suggest that school closures were effective or ineffective? I know there's been a lot of controversy, and I wonder whether your research looked at all at that here in the Northern Hemisphere, and perhaps even in the Southern Hemisphere, where maybe they have more control and command and control.
Right. Our research really focused more on what the issues were and less on the impact, because it's very hard to measure the impact, particularly in, you know, given sort of the data sources that are available, which are limited. There has been some data shown in Mexico that the interventions that they may have impacted social community interventions may have reduced spread of H1N1, although it's not clear if they were actually the community interventions or if it was just the waning of the natural waning of H1N1. So the short answer is no, not at this point. Yeah, we did look some, and actually Mike Soto can talk a little bit more about surveillance because he's done quite a bit of work on surveillance. And this again is a challenge because there, depending on the location, data is collected differently. So some health departments collect data directly from the schools, others use school absenteeism. You know, there's a whole variety of ways to collect that information, and we didn't use that in this analysis, and it's very difficult. I mean, I'm sure you know, it's very difficult to, first of all, get that data and to know how accurate it is. And Mike can speak to some of the other surveillance issues in terms of sort of overall surveillance in H1N1.
I think there's not much time, but I'll answer both questions actually by saying, effective for what, surveillance for what? And one of the things that we found, for instance, I think that your question about effectiveness presumes that the goal is to prevent spread of the community. If the goal is to prevent kids themselves from becoming ill, well, I think it probably did work in that sense. When you talk about surveillance, do you mean surveillance for confirmed cases, probable cases, absences, what the absences mean?
Yeah, well, and that's often, our question. You know, what number is the best number?
And I think that what
Right.
I think that's really the bottom line, is that the goals are not clear.
Yeah.
And for any of these things, and that leads to a lot of uncertainty and uncertainty in the future. From a process improvement point of view, which is what our study is really deep.
And have you found that
It's not really all that clear, but just anecdotally, I would say for the most part, no. That it was based on a whole variety of things, probably least of which was actual data. Yeah. Unfortunately.